Hello and welcome back to the Let's Backflip Show. It's Ryan Fring here, co-creative director at Backflip and Lord of the Podcast, here to regale you with stories of triumph, fear, and love. Today, we've got Joe Fulton, Emmy-nominated editor, hanging out with us on the Happy Hour Let's Backflip Show. And Joe is actually a longtime friend of our very own Jeffrey Bellini. And this was fun. We had Jeff and Joe on at the same time, so we get to hear some old stories. We could actually see some footage, which won't play on the podcast. So maybe you could go check it out on Facebook or YouTube. If you search for Joe Fulton, kind of in our library of video, you might be able to find it. Otherwise, the post on the website or in the show notes will have the video. So check that out. You can find that. Joe's worked on sitcoms such as Will and Grace, The Great Indoors, and his latest project includes a film, A Thousand Little Cuts, and a new AMC show called Kevin Can F Himself, both which will premiere in 2021. Now, let's see. I don't think I saw Kevin Can F Himself come out on AMC, so now I got to go look that up. I don't follow AMC very closely, but I do watch Walking Dead. I assume they would have advertised it. Come on, AMC, get your stuff together. So I'm excited to see that. We had a great conversation with Joe, and like I said, got to see young Jeff and young Joe in their first filmmaking efforts, which is really, really fun. So this is going to be a good one. If you haven't already, please do like, subscribe, follow, hit the bell, do the thing, all the stuff you know. All this podcast, if you're listening, is wherever you want it. It's on Apple, it's on Google, it's on Stitcher, it's on Blueberry, it's on Overwatch. That's a video game. I don't know. We're in all the places. All places podcasts are sold, we're there. So check us out. If you don't mind, drop a review. That helps us in the algorithm and other people can discover it and we can just reach more people. The goal of this really is just to network and have great conversations with the people that we know, the people that we want to know, and just get better together. Because when we share our own personal experiences, nobody's copying anyone else. And when we share this, I think we can grow together and just do a little bit better. So without further ado, this is episode 43 with Joe Fulton and Jeff Bellini. Hello and welcome back to another Backflip Happy Hour. I am Ryan Fring, one of the creative directors here at Backflip. And today's going to be really, really fun. But first, let me also introduce the other creative director, John Shoemaker, over here. Say hey, John.
Hello. I am not Ryan Fring, but I am also a creative director.
I love how glitchy that just got. And it was like, I am also a creative director. So joining us today, we've got actually two people. We've got one guest and one semi kind of host, partial host. Here we go.
I have been here quite a bit, actually.
You have. You're like a partial host. So I'm going to introduce Jeff. Everyone knows Jeff, our editor.
Can't tell.
And yeah, I'm just going to ignore what you have going on there.
This is what happens when I'm in my room by myself.
This is what happens when you and Joe get together.
This is very true.
And yeah, we've got, hey down there.
Hey. Over here, aren't you?
We've got Joe Fulton, our guest for today, Emmy nominated editor and longtime, can I say, like a schoolyard friend to
yeah,
Jeff Bell?
Classroom friend, yeah.
Classroom
yeah, yeah.
friend?
Yeah, yeah. He and Julio and myself were all, you know, friends down at the schoolyard. So
awesome. Well, thank you for joining us, Joe. We have been talking a little and trying not to talk very much. So for those that don't know you, I'd love to get kind of the intro, like who are you? What do you do?
Yeah, well, as you said, I met Jeff when I was in, we were both in second grade. We were both in the same classroom. And I think we met because, Jeff will confirm this, our teacher, we were going to an assembly in second grade and our teacher said, you know, everyone be quiet and those who are quiet can go or whatever. And we were the only two that were quiet. Yep. So we were able to go to the assembly and everyone else was like punished for not going to see whatever.
She actually pointed out, she's like, guys, you see how Jeff and Joe listen? and are doing what I'm what I asked, do what they're doing. Jeff, Joe, you guys can go to the assembly.
Also, you're probably like, oh, thanks, teacher. Now we're going to get like, picked on.
Right. And I'm pretty positive we went and go see, I think they were showing, what is that, the Grinch Night, like the Halloween, the Grinch cartoon.
Entertainment thing. Yeah. We got rewarded. And so anyway, we were basically like, I guess we should be friends.
Yep. All because we need to be quiet.
Yeah, we know when to talk and when to shut up.
I've got I don't have that ability anymore.
Yeah, we were friends, and we grew up in the same town and went to the same high school, and we stayed friends now, you know, still. And I now live out in Los Angeles, and I work on mainly TV shows as an editor, and it's going great.
That's awesome. No big deal. Now I'm out in California, you know, cutting TV shows.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I mean, Jeff and I, you know, obviously we're friends since the second grade, but like we did bond because we had developed similar interests. You know, in middle school, like I found a camcorder in my parents' basement, and like we started creating, you know, as kids do, you know, everyone will do it from time to time, but then like it just became like an every weekend thing. We were like, we're making a movie, we're making a TV show. Mm-hmm. And eventually we, in like middle school or high school, we started editing, and then I think both of us were like, this editing is like really the fun part of this movie making. I know Jeff really likes to write and stuff, and I tried to write, and I'm terrible at it, so you know, Jeff still does some of that kind of time.
It's okay, don't tell my bosses I'm terrible at editing.
Yeah, you're a part-time.
Yeah.
So I think it's kind of funny how we both now are just editors. I mean, not just editors, I know. And I believe also editing is the last rewrite. So I guess I'm sort of a writer in my own way at the very end of the project. So, you know, we've been best friends for bleeped out number of years.
As we said before, we've been friends long enough that our years together can drink legally. We'll leave it at that.
Yeah, that's okay. I feel like most of our audience is going to be at our age, you know, or around our age, so they understand, you know, the importance of going far back like this.
Can drink legally, 9-year-old child. Well, actually, probably older than that, technically.
either that, or there's probably also a few middle schoolers on the stream.
Oh, yes.
You had asked before if we had any gotcha questions. I don't have any gotcha questions, but I was wondering if you or Jeff, maybe Jeff, you can find any of that early stuff that you've done. Shoot it to me. I'll get it queued up. We'll do a little show and tell later if you can find any of it. That'd be amazing.
I have stuff digitized.
I have a ton of it digitized. Are you going to do the one with the two things? Is that the one you're going to send him?
I
don't want to like give it away.
I could send that one.
Yeah.
And see, it's in the middle. We know exactly what you're talking about.
Tell him the point in it where we could start it. It's like right in the middle. See, we already know we're...
I know exactly.
We don't want to get down this road too much, but I guess we could before we play that thing. I'll preface exactly what it is. But you know, I mean, Jeff and I made, I mean, a whole catalog of things.
Yes,
we made sitcoms. We made a music. We made tons of music videos. We made a talk show. It was just the two of us too. I mean, this camcorder we had, it wasn't even a camcorder really. It was. I mean, it was a body of like a lens. And it had a cable that would attach to the VCR, and you had to put the tape in the VCR and record on that. So it wasn't mobile. It was, well, this angle in my parents' basement is the living room, and this angle is the driving in a car, and this angle is the bar they went to or whatever, or the restaurant.
Even down to the point where, like, years later, when we actually with an actual camera, which the one I'm getting up, Joe, that's the one we filmed with the actual camera, right? Are we thinking the same run?
Oh, yeah, I guess because it does go to some other locations. Yeah. So then, years later, we matured into a camera that could go anywhere. And
we still filmed it.
We made action movies. We made the funny part was we did go to the same elementary school, but we ended up going to different middle schools and then to the same high school. And it was in middle school when we started to make videos for school projects. You know, I have to do a book report, but can I do a video? And surprisingly, like, all my teachers always said yes. And of course, I would help Jeff with his, and he would help me with mine. And by the time we got into middle school, or high school, I'm sorry, by the time we got into high school, I had people coming up to me like, aren't you the guy from Jeff's videos? Jeff had guys coming to him. Guy from Joe's video?
We both had new friends in high school because of them seeing us in each other's videos. So they came up knowing who we were.
But the one that we started with and we ended with was this thing I'm sure you're going to show soon. And Jeff was like, there's this old TV show from the 60s called The Odd Couple, and it's just two guys that live in an apartment together, and you know, it's like, well, we're two guys, so we should do that. We should remake that, you know. And so we said, well, it's The Strange Couple.
Yep, because we weren't very creative with our names.
And basically just made stupid little TV shows with that. I mean, it was everything from like, it's a New Year's Eve party, let's go to Times Square. And we did one where we said, let's have a time travel episode where our future selves come back and warn us about something that we're about to do.
Yep. Specifically, you have to pay your taxes. Because as high schoolers, that's apparently what we were concerned with.
Without putting the cardboard on, we pulled out all of our tricks that our ninth grade selves.
You pulled out all the stops.
The sad thing is we don't have the raw footage for this anymore. We can't find it. So about years ago that we would love to go back. And like nowadays, I in an afternoon, I could redo all the VFX in this entire thing and actually do it well. Like, let's do it correctly now.
Oh, better than this? You're kidding me.
with the highlight of the green screen still on the upper left ink. Like, come on.
Oh, nice. Yeah. That's so great. And like a little, you can see the fold or something.
Yeah, so horrible.
So this is great. We can watch this. Do you want any more setup, or do you want us just to watch it? I think you guys won't get the audio, but the people who are watching the stream should.
Okay.
Well, I don't need to hear it again.
I don't want to hear my voice from high school.
Also, you know, without being able to see it, you know, John and I also have very similar experiences like this. Like, oh, we could do an assignment as video. So I feel like that's all of our main story. But I just glanced at this out of the corner of my eye, and it kind of looked like John.
It does look like John.
You know, a little bit. Turns out he was also best friends with you guys.
Yeah.
Really, we were going to say.
Those middle school teachers approving projects as videos, I don't know what they're doing.
I know. I did a 30...
There's four people in the career
launching a lot of careers, but we weren't getting much work done. No.
Or very accurately either in some cases.
Yeah. All right, here. We'll go ahead and watch it. We'll see what happens. Oh, wait, did you send it to me with a time code? Do you want that time code?
There's like a minute.
Okay.
Intro crap that doesn't matter. This is when we actually showed up. So.
Yeah, I don't have any sound. That's okay. Let's see. What do we want?
I don't really think you need the sound, to be honest.
Can you reenact it for us? Here. What is it, future self? Tell me.
What? Yeah.
You must
I'm you from the future. You got in about an hour, you got to eat the nastiest burrito of all time. Oh, gross.
Oh, we do have the audio. It's playing now. Hey, where did I find this act?
By the way, this feels like a very Jeff sort of script right here. Just the, it's me. Who me? You? Like, I feel like I've seen Troll do this before. All right, let's see.
Oh, it's so bad.
Oh, here we go. Yeah. Yeah, they don't have audio, but I might be able to get it if I do this.
So, and if you can see, like, we thought we were so clever. We went out, I think, to like a Michael's or like a craft store, and we bought like we went to like Office Max. We bought construction paper, like board you would use for a project that was like bright neon colors, because we're like, well, it's got to be a key. It's got to be like a blue or, you know, like a bright color that we can key out. And we ended up using a blue sheet, which wasn't quite blue anymore. This one we're using, you can see the pink. Like, we're using like a neon pink piece of like construction paper.
Yeah,
as our
blue, it's a bad key.
Yeah, blame the key.
That's awesome.
But I just
go ahead.
Like, oh, look, we're kind of see-through-y, like we're ghosts.
Which is just a part of the story, you know, historically. Yeah.
We'll all right. That. Also, can we please ignore the fact that I'm wearing mostly denim?
This is where we get the nickname Denim Heartthrob.
Yeah, exactly. There's no way that anyone should ignore that fact. That's
this look is coming back. You should bring it back.
I wish I had that hair.
I mean, it's just like a little mohawk in the front is what it is.
It is, and I have a creeper, like a creeper stash going on too. Like, it's a very, very thin, barely anything, but none of this lusciousness right now.
Yeah, I believe this was 12th grade, not 9th grade. Also, yeah. In case anyone's wondering why we were like the oldest 9th graders in history.
Let's see. I'm pretty positive this is like 2002, 2003-ish.
That's what I was gonna say. So, like 18 years ago, that's about as much facial hair as I can grow now. So that's what I look like now. Here, I do have some audio.
You mean high schoolers aren't in their 30s?
Yeah.
I was watching
Cobra Kai, and those kids are like young, mid-20s. All right, so I do have audio. Cool. I don't know if you guys might have had it before. You might not have it now. We'll see. But people at home will at least get to see the gloriousness of this.
I'm you, man. You're me?
Yeah, man. Look at me.
Fat.
Oh my god.
Hair, glasses. I'm you, okay? I'm you in 2 weeks. I'm here to tell you something, man. It's really important. What do you want? No. I'm here to tell you that you have to pay your taxes.
This is so bad. But I love it so much.
Money.
I mean, this is so good, and I love it.
You're not me.
Also, you have an axe.
For whatever reason. Just because that's where the.
That was a heck of a move. Yeah.
Oh, here's the good one. Here's the greatest one. Puts the card down.
It would have been good if the key actually worked.
That's so great, though.
I guess the planning that we, and by the way, I mean, this was obviously edited, but
money or something.
Most of our stuff was just done in camera with no editing, and then,
yep.
Which is why when we got to the editing part, we were like, we like this. Is this a career we can have?
But like that's like my foot on the left hand side. But like, I'm actually pretty proud of the fact that we came up with these bits that like is what Hollywood actually kind of does.
Come on, Grover.
Body double.
Also, I love positive Joe. That was you, and you didn't put my shirt on. You just put it on backwards, just so it had the arms. Slide out, Jeff. Slide out. Don't cross the line.
How did you do this effect? Because you don't need a green screen since you're not crossing anything.
I guess we didn't know you could just crop. We thought you could only key.
Yep.
Okay.
Like today, we would have cropped it.
Right? Like, because I don't know what we're even using. Were we using like Movie Maker or something like that? Like, we were using a very rudimentary editor.
The earliest version on the Microsoft computers of. And I don't know if it was called Movie Maker. I think it was something else, but it was like the father of Movie Maker.
Windows MS Paint for video.
Yeah, it was something ridiculous like that. It's like, it's the most rudimentary. They expect you to be making this little slideshow and like just putting clips from your camera together and like that's it. They weren't expecting you to do anything fancy like this.
You may have actually just been editing some other thing, and then I was like, what is key? And you were like, oh, key, we could do like a chroma key.
Because naturally that's where my head goes. We can do chroma key, let's do a time travel episode.
Looks like we have a visitor up here. A little extra help for the stream.
Yeah, that we do. She was supposed to be sleeping, but she's a baby. She doesn't know.
Not taking directions well.
She does not like our green screen.
The reaction that most people have when they watch our early show.
That's awesome. Here, we got just a couple minutes left. Minute and a half.
So, Grover,
and then there's
not heeding the advice from their future selves.
Oh my gosh.
Pay their taxes.
Wait, here, hang on, let's see. Who's the future selves?
Not heeding the advice from their future selves.
Us in the sweaters.
These guys? Okay.
That was how you told the difference. We were wearing sweaters, gray sweaters.
Yeah, and you guys switch sides. That's
everybody
fun.
Wears hooded gray sweater.
Did not pay their taxes. Using new experimental inventions from the IRS. Future Fred and future
nice
Robert,
stock.
Back in time to warn their past selves about the horrors of
that. That's been my profile photo on Facebook a dozen or two times in the last like 15 years was the photo of us.
Which made the entire universe collapse upon itself, utterly destroying everything.
I think at a certain point we realized it was going downhill and just cut.
Exposition.
Yeah, and the ending of it being basically that the universe just destroyed itself because we time traveled. This was the final episode we did. This was the last one of these.
Now, where did these names come from? Grover Douglas and Fred Winkle.
That's what our sixth or seventh grade selves have decided the name of the character should be, and then we stuck with it.
Yep. Also, I love that I'm the special effects supervisor because I'm like, we need the green screen. That was
it. Had to call out who did the terrible job.
Yes. Oh, and then that's another person that did.
That's great when you just alternate who does what. Oh, that wasn't an alternation.
Back in the day when we had credits, that was just us.
Yeah.
Oh, I like the problem specter. I need to bring that one back.
There we go.
And most of these movies, we all like our credits are like longer than the movie.
So now, how do we get from how do we get from this to Emmy nominated?
As I said, I just kind of really liked the editing, and when I did go to college and studied TV and film production and moved out to Los Angeles. And I was very vocal when I was having these entry-level jobs about I want to work in editing and in post and be an editor eventually. And I think in a lot of the entry-level jobs, that kind of set me apart a little bit from the other candidates who were coming in. And I want to be an actor or writer or director or whatever. Just made me appear different to these candidates, but I just kept working hard because I kept getting these jobs and just sort of like inserting myself into, hey, what's going on? You guys need any help or whatever? And what can you teach me? And I got more and more experience in post and moved up to finally being an assistant editor, which helped me get promoted to editor eventually. And I was nominated this year for an Emmy for working on Will and Grace, and it was, I mean, frankly, surprising to me. I think it was a lot of the fact that it was the show, it was Will and Grace that I was working on that was ending its final season. And, I think the audience that votes on these things, enjoyed the episodes that they saw and put my episode up, which was very shocking and just really an honor. Unfortunately, I did not win, but did not expect to win. So
mm-hmm.
no hard feelings or surprises there.
Well, and what was that like when you went out there? You know, we've talked on the show several times about different ways of doing things. We just started doing crap here and built a business on that. And then we have lots of friends who did what you did. And the ones who made it are the ones who just stuck with it. You know, went out there, started maybe not doing what they wanted to do, but eventually, you know, within 7 years or 10 years are doing awesome stuff, you know, what they wanted to do. And so that's kind of like the gumption category of just sticking with it. What was that like when you went out there? You know, because you think about that, you know, nice Midwest boy going out there. Were your parents supportive? Jeff was probably really supportive. But, you know, what was that like? Were people skeptical? You know, was it hard?
Yeah, it was very hard, I would say, to obviously uproot my life and move out there. You know, I had everything I wanted to take out in the packed in a Geo Prism, which is not very big. And I mean, my parents were very supportive, and Jeff was always there supporting me too as well. You know, and like I said, when I would go in for these interviews for these entry level jobs, PA, where you like make copies and distribute stuff and pick up mm-hmm. lunches and stuff, you know, what I found, I ended up booking a lot of these jobs over the years because, you know, there's a TV show and then it's over and then there's the next season or you get on a pilot or something. And I would go into all these interviews and I would literally see the turning point in the coordinator who was the one going to be making the hiring decision. Like, oh, so what do you want to do? And then I was like having an okay interview. And as soon as I said anything that wasn't writing and directing, they were like, oh, you're not going to go bother the writers. They get bothered a lot. So that would suck me out. And then I think my Midwestern work ethic, really, I mean, it sounds super cliche, but like I was always hard at work, I think. You know, I didn't want to be lazy or let anyone down for any reason. And then, mm-hmm. you know, I was happy to jump up and do something, even though I never wanted to do anything. Like my first job not being a PA, I was like, thank God I'm not making copies or getting someone lunch again. I'll get lunch for somebody else. you know, somebody hired. So that was, you know, and I see, because I worked on a lot of shows now, and I see like a PA like being lazy or something, and I don't tell anybody or whatever, but like I don't see them back the next season. So
yeah,
you know, somebody noticed. And, you know, then when I did get into post, which took me a few years to get a post PA job, just being, you know, obviously eager, like assistant editors and editors, you know, they are very busy. They don't have mm-hmm. tons of time, but no one really asks for help or advice or anything. Mm-hmm. So when someone does come up, I think they take that to heart. Like, oh, this person is actually serious about advancing in this career and you know, what can I teach them? And like my first assistant editor job, I was extremely prepared for what I had to do because I had, as a post PA, like sat down with some assistant editors and like taken notes and like kept those notes. And like 2 years later, the night before my job, like read what they said and was like, I don't know what they said, but I got to do this when I get in there. And then there obviously is, in editing today, it's a lot of software knowledge and computer knowledge because, mm-hmm. you know, the old days with film or if you were cutting on like tape, like in a newsroom or something, there would be a lot of manual labor or whatever with literally cutting and splicing and mm-hmm. combining the film. And the assistant editor, I think, would be a lot, or in those film days, was a lot more hands-on and like literally learning the craft of the editing because they're doing it with the editor, you know, oh, this is a second or whatever, and like getting a feel for like the length of the footage.
Mm.
Today's assistant editor job is a lot like a data wrangler and a media manager because you're making sure that all the files are online on the computer and getting the footage downloaded or exported or whatever it has to be. And you're not actually in there doing the editing, you know. Mm-hmm. Or assisting with the editing. You're assisting with the organization of the editing.
So, yeah, you're prepping.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it is. So I had also, you know, knew that knew the software that we were using. So we use Avids on the multicams that I tend to work on, and I prefer Avid over Premiere or Final Cut. But I know that a lot of them have their. I think you guys use Premiere, right?
Not no yeah. more.
Oh. We have been primarily Premiere usage up until probably, of course, literally Andrew just walked out of the room. But yeah, up until maybe like a month or so ago, and we have taken a very 90 degree hard turn into using Resolve.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. I know a lot of them have their benefits, and mm-hmm. I messed around with Resolve a little bit. I think for you guys, because you're doing all the finishing there, it's mm-hmm. great to have that, and it's just communicating with itself, or doesn't mean to communicate, it just takes the project and goes into the color correction or, mm-hmm. or whatever.
Yeah, and well, yeah, Premiere.
We still do use After Effects for a lot of like the mm-hmm. VFX, like the heavy VFX work, if we ever need to do it. But just because Fusion can be a little, I don't know, I still can do it faster in After Effects, but mm-hmm.
right. Yeah, and Premiere. I think what we ended up running into was kind of two things: was file management and playback. Mm-hmm. You know, I could put the most expensive chips into a computer that I could, and Premiere would crash or have issues. Oh, and you got to restart and reload and things like that with stuff that it shouldn't have issues with. And then, so that was the kind of file management and then color correction. Yeah. You know, color correction and finishing was just not
to
great.
To some extent, you know, the skill of editing and how to use these softwares is similar. You know, like it's, you know, they might be in a different place, but the ideas behind it are, well, I've got right. my media in this bin and I need to assemble it in this way and keep track of my timelines and things like that. So
except Final Cut X.
Except for, well, and that we could go off on a whole thing, but I think that's part of the reason that there was such a backlash to it was like, okay, software is software and whatever works, works, and we might shift to something else. But when you change the whole, you know, paradigm of how this right. is supposed to work, like
I have my like theory that is not founded by anything I've heard. It's just, I think that they took it and then downgraded it basically in the next version because they were getting a lot of technical support calls from production companies or studios. And they were like, it's a $300 piece of software. We don't have a tech support hotline. You know, we're not any of those other things. So they took a lot of the features that working professionals like to use. That is my theory. That just based on my thoughts.
That's your professional theory. Well,
it's a business thing too, and I kind of understood it as a business decision. Like, yeah, I mean, if you could sell, I don't even know the numbers. You know, if you could sell a million copies of a $300 piece of software to a bunch of middle schoolers trying to do their projects for school. Or yeah. soccer dads or whatever.
And keep at it, by the way, middle schoolers doing projects for school.
Yes.
Yeah, versus
look where you end up.
Versus, you know, selling, you know, 30. Whatever, 100,000 copies yep. to the professionals in the industry that
yeah.
we have bigger demands and
right.
call the tech support.
Right. Right. Oh no.
Yeah, what's so your what's God,
calling tech support.
What's that been like for you? Because I don't know, maybe over the last 10 years or 15 years, Premiere has become a thing that professionals can actually use. Yeah. I know there's still standards. I know people still cutting or doing their best to cut on 7. I think most of the people that I knew cutting on 7, Final Cut 7, have converted to Premiere or something else. But what was that like in your experience? Because, yeah, you used Windows Movie Maker in the beginning or something, and then you're out there and they're probably exclusively using Avid, but then other technologies are coming on, technologies that you could afford or you could master outside of work. Yeah, just kind of generally what's that been like?
Yeah, I've tried to familiarize myself with Premiere, and then I've poked around in Resolve, DaVinci Resolve before, just to get a handle. And it's like John said, like they're, you know, they're your tool. And like, you know, a carpenter has a hammer that has the grooves in their hand that they're comfortable using, and they use somebody else's hammer. It's a little awkward, but it still pounds the nail. So, you know, these concepts and stuff that I've been picking up on and learning and still learning, those don't change. And yeah, if someone was tomorrow was like, we're gonna have to use Premiere for the rest of whatever, I'd be like, okay, well, give me a couple days to to learn the really things I need, and I'll pick up the rest along the way. Yeah, I have done a few things in Premiere, and so I was like, oh, it's this hotkey instead of this hotkey, or it's this button in, or this, you know, click over here. One thing about Avid, I don't know exactly how Premiere is like, is you can customize your keyboard and your buttons on your screen. And like, I found myself doing something a lot, and I was like, if I just make this a button press, I don't have to go find the button on the screen and press it. I can do something on my keyboard, and it'll be faster. And
yep.
And so,
I am all for keyboard shortcuts. Yeah. We constantly try to find like, where are we using the most frequently?
Yeah.
What is the, like, what am I always doing? And okay, so if I have to do this keyboard shortcut to give me this tool, but then just to cut this and then manually click this to get rid of it, why can't I just, there's got to be a keyboard shortcut that I can do to do all those steps in just one, you know, swoop. And like little things like that, like I'll find it. I know it saves all of, you know, 3 or 4 seconds, but
that adds up.
It adds up very quickly.
You do that 200 times a day.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, and most of the tools are going to have keyboard shortcuts, but then where the rubber meets the road or the hammer meets the edit suite is when the yeah, I don't know what you're doing with a hammer by your computer anyway, but you know, I worked when I interned way back when, kind of as a PA on set, but then as kind of like an assistant to the editor in the office, and they were on an Avid system, and really like the huge difference, huge gap between the consumer or even prosumer and then bigger systems are just like, not just keyboard customization, but the customization of like how you're rendering and what parts of the computer you're actually using. Like, I want to use this much CPU and this much GPU, and then I want it to do these things. You know, that's kind of where I saw the bigger differences. And then that's where we started. That's why we've been changing a little bit, because, you know, we were running into problems with like, well, I don't have access to the settings, these more technical settings. And at the end of the day, then that just slows you down, you know, when you're trying to edit and you're kind of getting in the groove and you have to stop because things are freezing up, and, you know, that's not good for the craft. So
we do have a question from Aaron Williams. He says, what's up, bitches?
Hey, Aaron.
Let's see.
I suppose that's a question.
Did you guys go to school with Aaron? Was he a Janesville guy? I don't remember. Sorry, Aaron. I don't remember your life history.
We started working with Aaron on the earliest Madison 48s. The first one that was done in Madison, actually, the 48-hour film fest.
Yeah, 07.
07, yeah. That was House Call.
Holy cow.
Yeah. Yeah, we did the very first, we did the first like 6-7 years. At least I personally did. Joe, you helped with that one. Was that the one you edited?
Yeah.
Was House Call?
Excuse me. That was the one I edited.
That's right.
That was a fun project.
Yeah. That's out there on the internet somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
Time for show and tell.
Yeah, I guess I'll find that one. Give me a couple minutes.
Jeff wrote that one. It's all his fault.
Yeah, it is all my fault.
Hey, the story can be made or broken in the edit, so. That's, we like to joke. Words. We joke with Jeff, too, because he's a writer, but he also gets to write in his editing on projects that he did not write. You know, which is fun. So we like to say it's
edit something that's constantly speaking on people's backs. It's like, oh, we'll just speak on the over the shoulder shot.
Yeah. It makes life easier.
There you go. So we totally understand that kind of that mentality, like being a writer as an editor, because we often are like, okay, here's some main ideas. This is when we're doing more narrative stuff, more documentary style stuff, that it's like, okay, here's what we're trying to do. Here's what we filmed, and here's some ideas on how to get there. And then all that, you know, how you get there can be made in the edit. And it's always so cool because John and I don't edit anymore. Originally we did. But with these awesome editors, we don't. It's so cool to see like their first pass, like their take on an idea, because, you know, I think there's something to be said for that person who writes, directs, edits, stars, whatever. Sometimes they do really great work. But when you insert somebody else into that flow, I think you can get just a great and different perspective. And we see that. And I'm always impressed by that. And like, oh, I didn't think of that. Well, that's because Jeff is super organized and anal about details and connected these dots anal. That I hadn't even connected, you know? And so that's really fun to see with a editor who is not yourself.
When you talked about writing before, I mean, we hired Jeff because, you know, half because of the writing, because you're a writer, you know, like, we needed an editor, but it was like this market too, you know, where the teams are smaller. It's like, yeah, you're going to be writing a lot.
Yeah. I mean, you guys are doing, I mean, so much stuff. I know you do, you know, you do commercials and you guys did a documentary and a little,
you but know, you saw the documentary, didn't you?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
All, just all like randomly on TV.
It's great. Yeah, it was streaming or airing somewhere. Yeah, and I knew you'd worked on it, so I had set like 5 reminders to go check it out.
Nice.
And, yeah. Yeah. And yeah, I mean that's really tough to shift gears all the time and to be doing all those different projects and you guys, you know, I think, you know, maybe Jeff can like, oh, this is my week to edit this thing or this is my day and I know I've segmented, but like you guys are all have your brains in 1,000 different places. I'm sure I don't really envy what you're doing.
It's not easy.
Proud of you guys, but I don't want to do it for myself. Maybe I'm lazy. I'm sorry.
Joe, yeah. You are so lazy.
So, you know, I wonder too, what's it been like switching, you know, over the last 6 months or 9 months to, are you working from home? Are you not? What's that look like for an editor, especially when you're editing, you know, a real show, a primetime show that likely has just gigantic files, you know, and you know, all that file management. How do you do that if you're at home? I'm assuming you're at home. I'm getting too far ahead of my question by asking 3 or 4 questions, but what's that been like?
Yeah. So pre-pandemic, I was working on Will and Grace, and the great thing about sitcoms that I like is you're right there next to the stage or close by, like you're in the hub of the creative environment and you go to stage for the tape night. You know, there is one night with the audience that they film and usually the editor is there. I was the assistant editor on Will and Grace, but I was promoted up to editor for a few episodes at the end of the season. So, I wouldn't go to stage all the time, but like we were right there on a single camera show, you know, like Modern Family or some of these dramas and stuff like that. You know, you're so far separate. Like they might even be in a different state or a different country filming, you know, these shows, like all the Chicago shows that Dick Wolf is doing. I know like the editing is at Universal Studios, you know, uh-huh. Hop, skip, and a jump away from at Will and Grace, but they film them all in Chicago. So they're already, I think they were already set up. A lot of post teams are set up to have these, how do we get the footage from here to here? You know, and it's online or they're shipping a drive or shipping whatever. So when we're now, my current show is kind of a weird hybrid, which I guess we can get to later, but a lot of the post teams, from what I've heard, are doing the work from home. So they're all remoting in from like a home workstation to the Avid or the software that's at the, the computer is on in the office and it's being connected. So someone has a second computer that they're editing from. So that is what I have. I have a setup here at home that just with internet, I'm you know, doing my remote desktop, basically accessing the avid there. And there's a few times when the internet gets slow or there's something, it's a little hard to like make sure, because I'm like, you know, if I'm setting up like a cut and I'm like, it should, you know, what frame should it be going on? And I'm like, is the audio header behind? Like, I'm hoping the delay is good. Yeah. So, you know, we put my first cut out the other day and it looked pretty good online. So I'm hoping, yeah, so that is part of it. I think everyone is doing that. There's probably a few shows that are doing like local stuff. So speaking on that a little bit, when you have like a team, either an editor and an assistant editor, or, you know, multiple editors and multiple assistants, they're using a shared storage and accessing all the media there. But I think there's a few that are shows that are like sending a hard drive with all the footage. So somebody has to be like copying this hard drive over, you know, two or three times and then sending it out. I'm just really glad I'm not on that, because, you know, importing a sound effect file or something could take 20 minutes when it should take 3 seconds. Yeah, so I am working on a show now, which is kind of an interesting show in itself.
I love this concept.
Right. So it's a new show on AMC. So it's not been released yet. We're still shooting the first season. And it is called Kevin Can F Himself. no, we're live, so I had to censor myself. It is an AMC show. It is an hour-long drama, but about half the episode. Sorry. I've had to explain this a few times, and I never do it right, so I apologize. So it's an hour-long drama about a woman who's married, and I don't think she's not happy in her marriage. So there's stuff she does that's dark and dramatic, and every time her husband comes on the show, we switch to a multicam sitcom with laughter. So he's the like Peter Griffin character. It's not animated, but he's the like schlub husband who like spends all their money and does all the stupid stunts all the time and has dumb ideas that never pan out, you know, and she has to pick up all the pieces that he has left behind. And like, so if you watch a sitcom, you know, like a Kevin James sitcom, you know, what was that one? He was a package guy, you know, King of Queens. You know, he does all this stuff, and then he like runs out the door, and then like we follow him, you know, to work or whatever. But like, what happened to Leah Remini? Like, what happened to his wife when she had to clean up the house? She had to like pay the bills. So Kevin Can F Himself follows the wife, and, you know, she has to deal with the fact that he, you know, if he's made a mess in the kitchen or whatever, and then he just go to work, blah, blah, blah. And she has to clean up that, or, you know, things that are larger have more higher stakes than that. So it's really interesting, because I am only working on the multicam scenes, and there's multicam laugh track sitcom scenes in every episode. Whereas the rest of the editors on the staff are all doing a traditional single camera setup where you do one, you do two, and you do three, and then you do four, you five, you six. So they're editing half of the episode as well, but they're doing the other half. So I'm doing half of all of them, and they're doing half of the rest of them. It's very interesting. So it's provided a little bit more challenges because of the COVID environment and the work from home environment and communication. You can't just go like knock on someone's door and say, you know, what do you think of this? Or let me show you something. So
what, so would you say one, two, three, four, is that just the different parts of the episode?
So on a traditional single camera show, there's one editor who works on episode one, they work on every third episode. So there's if there's three editors, number one does one, four, seven, 10, etc. And then
math. So,
just 7, 10. Who knows how high it goes? I can't that high.
So you know, any given day, I have three different editors asking me, "Where's this scene?" or "What's happening with this?" or or I'm asking them, what's going on with this, you know? So we're dealing with it.
Excuse me.
And it's fine. And then, as I was saying earlier, usually on on multicam shows, the editor is generally at the set, which, you know, some editors like and some editors don't like, but they're usually there and sort of editing the episode in their head while they're watching the quad split, as you can see on your screen right now. Like, imagine, nevermore.
Yeah, sorry.
you know, there's the four cameras on the multicam stage filming close-ups and wides and all different coverage at the same time. Whereas in a single camera show, you would go and do four different setups and do like three or four takes and then move to the next setup. So we're going to do three or four takes and get all four cameras at the same time. And we'll shift cameras and do a second pass for later takes to get the close-up we didn't get or something. But directors and the producers generally like the editor to be on stage just to go, oh, I don't have that. You need to get me that before we move on to the next scene. Because it is hard and it takes a little practice to watch a quad split and know that you're going to get all the pieces you need. So they've actually brought me to stage a few times, which is in Boston, which is on the other side of the country. So it's been interesting traveling, and they're doing a really good job out there with the procedures for making sure it's a safe work environment. We're getting tested like all the time, and you know, you can't talk to the actor. Well, you can talk to them, but you have to be a far way away. And you can't go on the set and just touch everything and the, you know, the props and
the
poop and all that. Yeah.
Can't sneeze.
Can't go and just be like,
can't just go steal the couch.
Whereas before you could.
Yeah.
So they're not doing that remote, because I feel like that could be something, you know, obviously being there is going to be better for the dynamic and the back and forth. But I have seen remote directing and, you know, a lot of remote stuff, remote agency, like trying to limit the people on set. So you're going to have a feed to the agency. You're going to have a feed to the director even, which to me is crazy. But have they done any of that? Have you participated in any of that where they're like, yeah, we want you on stage. Here's a link. Tune in.
No, I haven't. I have not done that. I don't know if they have that set up, but they also have an editing suite out there for me, so I can pop in and like edit something if they're wondering, not necessarily something that they just shot, but if I'm working on like the previous episode or something like that. So I think they're glad to have me out there. Yeah. I'll have to ask them if I could just remote in. That might be something.
Yeah. So we kind of talked a little bit about it before, but like you're going out to you went out to LA, right? That's where it was, and then starting as like a PA and working your way up. Did you learn how to edit a primetime show as an assistant editor, you know, and as an assistant to an editor or something like that? Or is this a skill? I mean, obviously you've been kind of in the filmmaking headspace since middle school, and maybe even before that, but did you go to school for it? What, you know, how, take me through that story.
Yeah, when I did go to college, I knew I wanted to study editing. And so I looked at schools that had filmmaking and TV making. And so I studied radio and TV at a school down in Peoria, Illinois, called Bradley University. And I went there because they had the professor who was in charge of all the radio and TV, he was just in charge of the TV production part of it. He had worked in LA. He had worked as an editor, and he had moved back to the Midwest, and he was the craziest character you've ever met in your entire life. We did like a little campus visit, and my dad was like, you have to go study with the cowboy. he didn't wear a cowboy hat, but he always wore boots and like black jeans, and he had a bandana.
And still a cowboy.
Bob Jacobs, and he had won a regional Emmy for editing a bunch of news packs down there. He had some really nice news things that they showed on a local NBC station, and I learned a lot from him and the other professors there, because I was going in and I was like, do all the editing classes. Sign me up for every editing class. And a lot of my classmates were taking like the news production because they wanted to go and work, you know, in the control room or at a news station. And I was like, I'll look into it, but like, that's not my jam. And yeah, so I was like the only person who never took that class. Or there was like a series of like three or four classes you take over the years, and I was never in it. And they were like, "What's wrong with you, Joe? Are you not part of the team?" And I was like, "I don't want to do that. Like, I want to focus on this class." So we did a lot of, or there was three or four editing classes as well that I advanced through the years. And, you know, when I did eventually move out to Los Angeles, like I said, I worked hard, and you know, I think a lot of people when they're young and they move to LA, from a smaller town, you get the idea, whether someone tells you or it's in your head or both or whatever, like, you're really good at what you do, you know? You're going to go out to LA and you're going to run the town in like 2 weeks. Like, everyone's going to be so impressed with you. And I mean, I don't think I really felt that, but like, I was like pretty confident and stuff that I was a really good editor. And, you know, obviously it took me a few years to get into editing, but like, you know, one of the ways you move from being like an assistant editor to an editor is when you have some time, you cut a scene on your own. Mm-hmm. You know, if you stay late and you don't get paid because you're trying to impress your boss and eventually get a promotion, or if you're just during the day, you literally have nothing to do or on your lunch break or something, you cut a scene. And so I cut a scene and my boss was like, "This is really bad. And here's why," like not in a rude way, but was like, "Let me teach you how to better editor." So I'm really lucky to have, worked with editors who like the mentor mentee relationship or teacher, whatever you want to call it. And like, so that was on, Mike and Molly, with an editor named Steve Prime. And, you know, I cut the scene and I was like, "This is like the perfect scene, man. He's going to be so impressed." And, you know, there was 1,000 things wrong with it. And I'm sure if I looked at it now, I would know there's 1,000 things wrong with it. And, you know, the timing was a little off and stuff like that. One of the big things in a sitcom is when someone tells a joke, you kind of let it live with them a little bit. And if you watch a single camera show, because I've been watching Schitt's Creek a lot because...
Oh, so good.
Yeah, it's really good. So I forgot to mention, Annie Murphy from Schitt's Creek is the wife in the show I'm working on. Mm-hmm. So I've been kind of watching that because I was like, "Oh, she's won an Emmy for that. Like, let me see if it's good."
Spoilers, it's really good.
Yeah, it's so good. So if you watch these single camera comedies, someone tells a joke and they usually cut to a reaction of the person that it's cutting or something. That's that breath where you get that laugh as the audience member that you don't hear, that you hear in a sitcom. So that is a big difference if you like really study a sitcom and a single camera, is like how long you let the comedian who's just told the joke, not the comedian, but the person, the deliverer of that joke, how long you let it sit and rest with them. It's a huge part of it. And so I was, so because, you know, that first scene I cut, I was like, joke, reaction. And it took a lot to get me to understand that part of it. And it, you know, it's something I do pick up on when I watch a lot of TV shows now. And it's just a different style of editing. And there was a lot of other problems, of course, I had along with that scene. But I, you know, I learned, and I cut another scene, and they cut another scene, and you know, eventually, Steve was like, "This is really good. I'm just going to put this in my cut." So I was like, "Well, I've learned a lot. I've learned something, and I don't know if he thinks it's good enough, or if it's really good, or better, or whatever." Because I was like, "Oh, I cut this scene, you know, that you hadn't cut yet. I worked from, I did the tag, the final scene," and he was like, "Oh, just put it at the end of my cut. That's good enough for me." So, and then so
the moral of the story is just do one really good cut and you'll be solidly golden for the rest of your career.
That was still took me a while, but yes. And then I worked on Will and Grace, where similar things, you know, I would cut a scene on my own and, "Oh, that's really bad. Why don't we fix it together?" or something like that. And that was with a different editor named Peter Bate. And, yeah, and then a really big, part of, I think, any show is, of course, the gag reel, the blooper reel. And I think assistant editors cut the blooper reel a lot. That's really, at least in sitcoms, that's where they do a, that's really where they shine, you know. A lot of editors are very hands-on, and a lot of editors are very hands-off of the blooper reel. They don't care to have anything to do with it, or they really invest in it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is kind of where, I guess I don't want to say made a name for myself in one grace, but at least people were like, oh, that nameless person over there. I guess they did a good job.
My name is Joe.
Yeah, I'll learn their name. So, because I know, you know, the editor was like, that was a good job. And the executive producers on the show were like, thank you for putting together a good blooper reel that you know, we can take, because, you know, the executive producers or the actors, they'll take a copy home and never watch it, of course. But at least, but I know that Max Muchnick on Will and Grace loves the blooper reels. And I think he'll just watch it. He'd be like, I remember 2018 being a good year. Let me watch that blooper reel or something like that. Like, he does love them.
There was a period there where you talked about how, like, you every time I talk to you, you'd be like, well, so I edited this blooper reel for this show. Like, oh, I'm doing the blooper reel for that. I'm like, is that all Joe's doing out there? Is he helping with stuff and then just editing the blooper reels? But
that makes just one more step.
Yeah. I mean, it actually makes sense that that's something that you would work on as part of that, like, the main editor wouldn't work on. Because, like, I know just from my own personal experience, not saying I am anywhere near what, like, a Hollywood editor, like, that's very different worlds. Still the same area, but like if I was to edit something like a long form thing or even like a full like 20 minute special, I would probably be like, Andrew, do you want to do the blooper reels for it because you have a better idea, or like the demo Andrew
or right the sizzle. Yeah. Yep.
yeah sizzle, do like a sizzle reel for like something, because it's like I know in my head I know all the content, but I'm only in the mentality of what the piece I put together was. I don't think I could switch over and be like, oh, let's make a funny, happy reel now. You know, I lucked out with the upstairs one, with that short film. I did the outtakes for that, but it was only because while I was editing, I was like, that's a funny outtake. I'll just put that in the outtake reel. And I kind of just had an outtake reel assembled from, you know, cut takes basically.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. There's, and it's really a challenging thing because you have to make it feel like a show, really. Like, you only get the footage once. They don't mess up again on purpose so that you have the coverage you need. So, you know, you have to take that funny bit, and sometimes it's like, we don't have the camera, but we're just gonna, you know, we'll make it work.
So I do have house call up. Did you guys want to preface this?
Oh god,
before the show and tell.
So real quick, just one more time, I guess, would be that it was the first, the very first. So there's these things called the 48-hour Film Fest. I feel like they're fairly well known nowadays. But the very first year in town here in Madison that they did it was in 2007. And at the time, I'm like, that sounds like such a great idea. It sounds like fun. You have 48 hours from getting the your genre. Getting the required character, the required prop, and the required line of dialogue, all of which you don't know until literally like 15 minutes before kickoff on Friday night. So you can't pre-plan pretty much anything except for maybe figuring out locations and your crew. And then it was like, all right, and go. And none of us had done it like this before. I mean, we've all made shorts, we all made things, but not to this extent. And
yeah, and you have to turn it in 48 hours later. You can't.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It has to be turned in
by your deadline.
Yep. Yeah, if you are 1 minute late, you are disqualified from winning the awards. They'll still show it, but you've been disqualified. And we unfortunately were like 10 minutes late on this one or something like that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like that's happened to all of us. Like, we have several, and we actually put a protocol in place where it's like, okay, render off the safety copy. And you have a safety copy. And it's not complete. It's not great, but you have a copy. And this was back in the day when, like, your render could take hours, you know, 5 hours or something for a render. So you're like, okay, let's fire off a render, you know, and that wasn't even that long ago.
I'm pretty sure the one that I did for the third year, Unknown Spectre, I'm pretty certain we started rendering on that Sunday. like at like 9 a.m. or 10 a.m. and we had our version like rendered and sitting, and it's like, okay, well now let's go back and do some more little effects, but it still took like 2 or 3 hours to do it back then. Mm-hmm. Nowadays I'm sure it would take all of 10 minutes if that.
So here we go, we've got this. I think they'll have audio but you won't,
and this is horror genre.
I saw a screen cap and I was, yeah, the screen cap in Slack is pretty good. I think that's Aaron Williams, right?
That is Aaron, yep.
Yeah. Aaron's getting the screen time.
Yes.
What was this filmed on?
Mini DV or something?
I do not remember.
Whatever was available.
Yeah, I'm pretty certain it's still DV tape. And I'm almost certain it's tape, because this would have been our friend Stephen Pickering's camera.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Know, so. Like Clearwater, is that his company in Janesville? Yeah. What is it?
Yeah. Drywater.
Drywater. That's right. Yeah. He's a great guy.
It's actually Productions anymore. We might have changed that last part. But. Yeah. Mr.
By the way, is this all natural hair with AA Ron?
I mean, Aaron, you can speak for yourself if you're still watching, but I
he says, yeah, boy.
Yep. Handyman is the character, was a required character.
Oh. Handyman.
Yeah.
And this is all filmed at Steven's house. Nice. This is his actual home. Everything in the black and white is all in his basement
or cellar.
Yeah, or yeah, it was more of a cellar. It was before he had cement down there.
Yeah, I remember he had a few locations lined up. It was just like, just in case we need an office or whatever. I just decided we didn't need him, but that's one of the things you do. You get locations ahead of time.
You're like, and that's his real grandma. This is fun. I mean, that's the one thing too that's so fundamental is like timing. Like you were saying earlier, Joe, like letting something breathe for a little bit, cutting it when it needs to be cut.
And there is a time limit to these videos as well. So naturally, anything I write tends to be 7 hours long. It's like, oh, we have a 7 hour long script and we have to condense it into a 5.5 minute short. Yeah, we can somehow do that.
Yeah, it looks like everybody could have more facial hair when they were little than I can as an adult.
Yeah, this short is only 13 years old. You're looking at the best quality version of it as well, because it's like in the early days of YouTube when nobody, like they couldn't take anything more than a 240p quality resolution or something.
Yeah,
right.
I haven't been listening, but just watching, like visually, this is great.
Uh-huh. I mean, I joked around that it's terrible, but it's actually really good, I think. I'm pretty proud of it. I do have a copy somewhere that I do watch from time to time.
Nice.
I have one on my media server at home that...
with a bottle of wine.
Because, of course, this is part of the New Prairie universe, of course. It's, you know, I retconned it in years later.
A few months ago, I just went through a whole bunch of these guys. And
got a little down.
What's is that hold a is that on. A drink coaster? What was that?
But I got something's happening.
Christmas lights, required prop.
I was feeling it. I was like, there's gonna be a twist. It's not the guy you think it is.
And that's the twist number one.
Oh.
Twist and number two is that
two.
It's all in his head.
Oh, here's my cameo.
She's dead. She was a ghost.
Oh, never mind.
Oh, it's coming up. It's yeah, Joe's.
You look a lot older, Joe.
Guys, that's me. Obviously, that's me without a beard. Come on.
It's a deep fake.
Yeah, it's super.
Or your hair is really long.
But actually, this will be Steven. Yeah, this is Steven and Cameron, his wife.
Nice. So even though it's like 200p, I like it. Like, it looks like a show to me. Like, it's very well done, you know, 13 years ago or whatever.
Years ago, there was kind of an accident here. Some grifter, he was a handyman of sorts.
Grifter, good word.
A little wonky, and one of the old owners ended up being killed.
But it's a great place. I mean, the furnishings are all included, and it's a great deal. You won't find a better deal this close to Madison.
That's right, Aaron. Smooth as butter.
Think about it. Well,
that'd be great. Yeah, we'll keep in touch. Hey, well, thanks for giving me the chance to show it to you.
Thank you.
Oh, I missed it. The shot of when he's telling about like there was a murder in the house. We cut to this reaction of Steven, and Steven's just like, "Oh yeah,
murder, yeah." He was very enthusiastic. He's like, "Oh yeah."
here's my cameo.
Right after this shot, when the phone rings.
Oh,
I actually did the camera work in the shot. That's right. This is me. Because I had a very particular, like, in my head of how that shot needed to be, and I was just like, I'll just do it. Let me film it. Here it is.
Jim, Mama, this is Jim.
I need Jim. Someone to come out and check my leaky faucet.
James Fawcett, this is Jim.
Oh, my God. She's gonna do it again.
She's never in. That's the twist. The third twist.
She keeps calling handyman. She just likes to murder handyman. I had the volume down, so I didn't hear the story. Why does she kill handyman? And
there was a grifter that had killed her. Yes. Like, that was the grifter handyman.
Okay, perfect.
All those like weird black and white like flashes, and that
full circle
was actually the handyman killing and burying her in the basement.
Oh, does that makes sense.
Does a ghost really need a reason?
No. So she's exacting her revenge on innocent grifters or handymen.
The economy of cinema. Also, I love the 50s style credits that you guys like to do.
we're all about funky credits.
That's really fun. And you have
credited.
You have more than just you two.
Yeah. I feel like this was probably like the biggest like crew I think was on any of the shorts that I had personally done at this point in my like career. Was like, oh, like there's actual actors, like tons of actors.
Good job shooting. People.
Oh yeah, I was the DP for this. I always forget that.
So this is like the beginning.
One time we got a Neil Diamond impersonator as an actor for our 48.
Oh, nice.
Oh, man.
We didn't know he was. He just was like it was like a early year. I don't know if they still do this, but basically it was just like somebody who wasn't assigned to a team, like through the official Madison 48 group. It was like, hey, this, you know, these people are looking for teams or whatever. And it was just like... And there he was, and he came.
Nice.
And
then
as we got to know him, we got to know that he was a Neil Diamond impersonator.
Okay, so Ryan, I see what you're pointing at. I think we might have had mac and cheese, and that might have been a purposeful misspelling.
I'm sure everything in here is purposeful.
Uh-huh. Also, you notice that nothing has really changed. There's three different pizza places that were sponsors.
That's how we run it still. Yeah. That's fun.
So that was one of the other places that we had.
Joe was the voice of Jim. Were you in this, Jeff, or not?
No, I actually am completely absent of this one. There's not I'm not any of like the dead handyman or anything because I was controlling the camera and doing all the shots the entire time. Oh, so like funny. I was too busy to actually be in the piece.
That's awesome. So we got a little bit more time left. It's about 1:15. I do want to get to know you, Joe, intimately, remotely. So we're gonna play a little game everyone likes to call Two Truths and a Lie.
Oh boy.
And in this case, just because of our timing, I might just make Jeff and Joe go and give John and me a pass because we've done this like 40 times. And you can't reuse stuff. Right. It becomes very hard to reuse stuff. And then we can get to know you guys a little bit better.
Yeah, I've lied so many times.
Yeah. Did you say, Joe, you know yours?
Yeah, I've got some. I think...
If you want to take a minute, I can vamp and
right.
Well, promote next week.
Well, I will preface this with saying, Jeff, if you truly don't know any of these,
yeah,
you can weigh in.
And here's,
this is what I'm actually worried about. I'm worried about this is the hinge of our relationship.
I want to save you for last, Joe, so I want Jeff to go first.
Okay.
And, oh my goodness, you're making me think of two other things real quick. Oh,
yeah, just write it down. we'll do a quick vamp. So Joe, is there anything you want to promote?
I did talk about my new show, which I don't even have an air date. It's coming out next year. Mm-hmm. Kevin can F himself. But I did edit a short film last year called Alexa.
Oh.
And we're actually premiering like in a week. So I have written down. It's about an Alexa, and maybe you don't want Alexa around all the time. We'll see. The website is alexaknowsall.com, and the Instagram is Alexa the Short Film, and it has Jonathan Sadowski in it, who was on Bleep My Dad Says, the William Shatner TV show on CBS a few years ago, and he was in Young and Hungry more recently, and he's a great actor. Yeah, there you go. So 7 days, alexaknowsall.com.
Nice.
And so I, you know, we had this all ready to go. It actually was at a film festival in Utah in January or February, and then we were literally, I was like getting my outfit ready for the Los Angeles premiere at a film festival out here, and it was like, COVID has closed all things. And in March. And so, I mean, the whole cast was going to be there, Q&A and everything. So we actually now are doing, we did a remote Q&A. So after the film premieres, there's going to be a Q&A with the films. It'll look like this with multiple video windows. And that'll be fun to tune in. I mean, it's a short film, so I think it's 3 or 4 minutes long. And then the Q&A, the credits are longer. No, I'm kidding. And then I did, so you can watch that.
Real quick, can I follow up with a question on this? So it premieres in 7 days and it'll be on here? Like, do we need to buy a ticket or can we watch it? Or
I believe it's just going to be online for free. It was such a low budget thing. They're not looking to like, I don't know, maybe there'll be a donate or something, but I'm pretty sure it's free. And if not, you can at me.
What is your handle, Joe?
My Instagram is Joseph Olten. There's no F. JOSEPHULTON.
Yes. It's clever when you actually look at it.
Yeah. The PH makes the F sound.
Exactly. You've used that for like ages too.
Yeah. It's been like my email and my, that's right. Hit me up there if you're follow me. I did post a lot of the like Will and Grace gag reels back in the day, or clips from the Will and Grace gag reels. Because Max, that's how I, you know, like I was saying, I got my people learned my name from that. So I would edit those things for Max, and he'd post them, and people love those, and were like upset if he didn't post them like every Thursday before we aired. And then I did edit a feature film called 1,000 Little Cuts that's going to be coming out next year.
Yeah.
So just be on the lookout for that. It's got Marina Sirtis on it. She was on one of the Star Trek shows in the 90s or 80s. I'm not sure which one she was on. And Rebecca Lydiard, she's a Canadian actor it's a really great film about a woman who has a traumatic event and she's trying to recall what happened to her. It's called 1,000 Little Cuts. It'll be out next year. We were also going to do film festivals and stuff, and that didn't happen. So now we're either doing film festivals in 2021 or getting distribution or something.
Mm-hmm. And how did those two things come about? Are they friends? Somebody reached out to you like, hey, I saw you did this. Like
the director of both of these is a longtime friend of mine, Josh Brandon, who has been a writer on Houdini and Doyle and a few other shows. And we'd worked on other little stuff before, and I've edited some of the stuff for him that he, stuff that like isn't like released and stuff like that. Stuff for like conventions he would go to. He goes to a lot of Star Trek conventions because he's close friends with a director, Paul Lynch. So I'd edited some like behind the scenes videos. Like I have this great video of a behind the scenes from Star Trek TNG, like with the sets and stuff. And then we edited that down to like a 2-minute thing that Paul would show at a Star Trek convention. So I met him and he like worked with me and trusted me with his feature film, which was great. So Alexa will come out next week, I guess, about 7 days, which is great.
7 days.
It's really, yeah, seven. And yeah, it's really funny and also prescient.
That was too big of a word.
Yeah, I don't even know if I'm using it correctly, but it is prescient.
But it's 100% prescient. Cool. All right, Jeff, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Because Joe was born ready. All right. So we'll also do this. So Jeff will give his two truths and a lie in any order. Our goal is to guess which one is the lie. And John and I will go first because you guys have known each other forever. So you're going to have the edge on us. So
it's true.
We'll save you for the last. All right. What do you got for us,
Jeff? Okay, here we go. Number one, despite my absolute love of classic movies, I have never seen Gone with the Wind all the way through. Number two, at a trip in Vegas, I met Penn and Teller, the magicians. And number three, I have been to the filming location of the Vietnam sequence from Forrest Gump, except prior to it becoming a golf course. And that's all
interesting.
He's trying to get us on a technicality. He was like, it was after it was a golf course.
Only because like, I got you on a technicality last time.
Yeah. Let's see here.
So never seen Gone with the Wind. I met Penn and Teller. And I've been to where they filmed the Forrest Gump Vietnam scenes.
Two truths and a lie. My focus. My camera needs to focus. All right. So John and I will go first, and then Joe, who knows the answer, will go last.
Yes.
What do you got, John?
I was thinking I knew what the answer was, and then I realized that I had identified what I thought was a truth, which wasn't what I was trying to do anyway.
That's a lot of caveats.
Okay, let's see. I'm just going to go with the gut. I think it's the first one. I actually had it messed up in my head which direction I was guessing, but you have. You are the type of person who would force yourself to sit through something that you don't want to for the sake of adding it to your collection of things you've collected.
Okay.
Nice. So number one was you've never watched Gone with the Wind. Number three was something about a golf course. I don't remember number two.
Number one's Gone with the Wind. Number two is meeting Penn and Teller in Vegas. And yeah. Number three was being at the filming location of the Vietnam scenes of Forrest Gump.
Okay. So I feel like number three is true. Let's see. We got a couple answers in the stream too. Carolyn says she thinks number one. Molly, our guest from last week, and Andy, her brother, they think different things. So Molly thinks number three. Being on set of, or not being on set, but being to the Forrest Gump location. Andy guesses number one. I'm going to guess number two. I can't remember how many times you've been to Vegas. Yeah. Because we went to Vegas for a nerd convention for NAB. Nice. We didn't see Penn and Teller then. I don't know that you've been to Vegas before that. It definitely wouldn't be your scene. although it's the type of thing that you could do to throw me off. So, yeah, Carolyn thinks that high school Jeff rebelled against watching popular movies like Gone with the Wind.
It's fair enough.
Yeah. I just think number two. So, all right, Joe, what do you got?
Oh, so someone guessed, John guessed one, and Ryan, you guessed two?
Yeah.
And three was Forrest Gump?
Yep.
Okay. So, I have been with Jeff when we have seen Penn and Teller in concert.
Oh.
At their show at the Rio.
Did you meet him?
And I remember we met Teller. I don't remember if we met Penn, so that might be a technicality, but I'm pretty sure that one's the truth.
Nice.
I know Jeff would go down to Atlanta or Georgia and South Carolina, and I'm pretty sure he's been to a filming location of Forrest Gump. He has family down there, and I'm just going to say that's true, even though I'm not 100% sure. But also, never seen Gone with the Wind. I know he had a podcast about the AFI Top 100, and I'm pretty sure that's on there.
Oh, that's
that has
right.
to be on the AFI Top 100. So he's
now I feel dumb.
So I'm going to say that's the lie.
That's 100% true. Yeah, that's 100% a lie.
Joe is correct. Yeah, AFI Top 100 podcast was the podcast I did with Lindsay Shank where we watched all 100 movies on the AFI, and Gone with the Wind is like number six.
Dang it, Jeff. Yeah.
Also,
you have too many podcasts.
Prior to that, I grew up watching Gone with the Wind. I actually did watch that movie a lot. Not a lot, but more than you would a 3-hour movie about the burning of Atlanta.
Also, again, I mean, if Jeff's got like the other 99... He's not, that's this personality is not compatible with leaving that one blank.
Yeah.
Nice.
It's not.
So I have been to the location. Joe is right. They filmed the Vietnam sequences of Forrest Gump on, not Frog Island. It's in Beaufort, South Carolina. Or it's just outside of Beaufort, South Carolina. I think it's Toad Huntington Island. And it was at the time when I used to go visit my grandpa in the early 90s, it was still the jungle looking environment, but it's actually now a golf course.
I think you'd been to the city stuff too, like the town square.
Yeah. So we drove.
So you've been to both. You've been to every.
I've been to most.
And you've been to the bench at the Paramount lot.
Oh yes, exactly. See, I've experienced Forrest Gump in reality. And yes, Joe, we did meet both Penn and Teller in Vegas. I have a photo of us.
Yeah, how dare you not remember?
I think I was just the visceral reaction of meeting Teller and hearing him go, "Hello, I'm Teller. How are you?" Yep.
Because he actually talked.
He speaks.
Oh, weird.
He doesn't speak on stage.
Yeah.
But he's the most chatty person. I mean, not. I think Penn's the most chatty person, but... Teller talks.
Yeah, maybe Teller has to compensate.
Definitely. Cool.
All right.
Good job, Joe. You're
so Joe and John, I think you guys both got it, as well as Andy.
Perfect.
They all three kind of tripped me up, so good job.
I tried. Nice. It was hard to come up with something that maybe you wouldn't have known, but that's impossible because you know everything.
Oh, and Carolyn got it. Okay, so Joe, you're up. What are your truths and your lie?
All right. Number one, I have broken my nose 3 times. Number two, I can dunk a basketball.
Mm.
Number three, I've climbed a 14,000-foot mountain in Colorado.
So I'll go first because John went first last time, and then we'll go John and then Jeff because Jeff's got a little more knowledge, inside knowledge.
These are tough, though. I'm not going to lie, Joe.
Yes, Carolyn, you did get the previous one right. Okay. Dunking. So that's number two. And number three, you said climbing or hiking?
I said climbed. I meant hiked.
Okay, so you've hiked.
Joe's like, am I going to take the path or just climb up the side of the mountain?
I've gotten to the peak of a 14,000-foot mountain in Colorado.
Okay. And then what was number one again?
Broken my nose 3 times.
That's right. Yeah. So you could just be really good at this game, choosing somebody else's story and telling it as your own. So I feel like number one's true. I feel like number three is true. Dunking is so hard. I'm not especially, I can't jump. I'm not like especially athletic in basketball. I said basketball.
Basketball.
But like, it's hard. That's like 10 feet in the air. I'm trying to think. You're a little over 6, right?
6'2".
Okay. So you'd have to jump 4 feet in the air to dunk. And if this is a current thing. That's
if he's dunking his head.
Oh, you're right. You're right. Because your arm. Okay. Thank you. So you got to jump.
Joe jumps in head.
Minus a foot. You got to jump 3 feet in the air. But you got to get high enough to get the ball above. So you still need that much more. I'm going to say number two is a lie. And I, if it's true, that would be amazing as well.
I love this became a math problem.
Like, well, yeah,
6 feet tall, so
breaking your nose 3 times, yeah. Oh, so everyone is guessing number one. So Molly says number one, Carolyn says number one, and Carolyn says if you do a quick scroll stalk of Joe's Instagram that he just gave, you'll see something about basketball. So she thinks number two is true. All right, I'm sticking with
stalker.
It.
Stalker
number two.
Well,
let's see what that post is.
Since I don't cheat like Carolyn, I, you know, it's just my predicament was I was going to guess number two, but I didn't want it to come across as an insult. But I feel like I could redeem myself by saying, yeah, I think you could hike 14,000 feet, but yeah, dunking. Not so much. Yeah, man, I'm in the same boat. Like, dunking is it's one of those things that like you kind of feel like, oh yeah, you know, if you got a little height, you should be able to do it. But it's just not that straightforward. I'm gonna go with dunking.
Nice. All right, Jeff, prove your friendship. We got two votes for number two.
You haven't broken your nose 3 times. I'm pretty confident.
You're just saying that?
I'm just saying that. I think it's number one. I'm like, I'm pretty confident that you have not broken it 3 times.
He broke it trying to dunk.
While on a 14.
But only twice, because the third time he dunked.
And that's when he realized that he didn't need to bang his head into the hoop.
Yeah, just his arm.
Yes, I've only dunked twice. And I broke my nose twice. No. Yes.
Yeah, I think it's... I'm going to... This I will feel horrible if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty certain you haven't broken your nose 3 times.
You think I've broken it at all?
I think I know you've broken it. Yeah. I know that much, but I don't think it's three.
It was three times.
Was it three? Dang it. Yeah.
Wah, wah, wah.
We were like within a month, so it was like...
Oh, see, I just grouped them together, I think.
Remember the summer I had the nose cast?
Yeah.
The whole summer?
Yeah. That's not okay.
It's so, and it came from a sweet dunking story.
Yeah. I mean, one time was in my front yard playing basketball. My brother tripped me on the way to the hoop. Ooh. And I slammed my nose into the pole, and it was not fun.
Oh,
sorry to gross everybody out.
No, so viscerally, like I'm feeling it in my body.
Yeah. I used to be able to dunk a basketball.
Nice.
So we don't know if that's true anymore. The mountain, I once drove, or my cousin drove me to the highest paved road in North America, which is about 13,900 feet. And we walked up 100 feet and said, ha ha. I hiked up.
See,
so
that's what I was worried about.
Well played. Well played.
Friendship. Oh, like
would have gotten the lie about the dunking, though. So I feel like I'm terrible at this game because everyone pretty much knew what it was, and Jeff just wanted to make it interesting by doing the other one.
No, that was good. We had two people who guessed number one. John is just really good at this game. He gets everything right. I guessed two. Jeff guessed. You guessed one as well. And then,
yeah, I got it.
Yeah. We all believe that you could hike up 14,000. It's just dunking is hard. Even when I lower it to like 8 feet, I still jam it sometimes.
Basketball on an 8-foot rim.
Well, see, and that's what I was sort of thinking. I'm like, okay, are you being nitpicky? Are you going the technicality around being like oh, yeah, I can dunk a basketball. I know you played basketball. I know you coached basketball. Like, I know all that. But it's like, did you actually like dunk a normal regulation size hoop? That's what I started wondering. That's what you were referencing, or like, you know, like the basketball that we had that you had in the pool. At your parents' house, you know, like.
Maggie wanted me to show everyone the card that she made for me.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that's pretty. So,
you know, is that a flower or a dinosaur?
I don't know. A dinosaur.
Okay.
It's me and her. I don't know which one is which, but I'm very happy about it.
COVID.
Awesome. Well, Joe, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
I can't remember who came up with the idea, but Emily or John or somebody to have you on. I was like, oh my gosh, we got to have Joe on. So I definitely want to have you back on as well, because I feel like we're just barely scratching the surface, especially with, you know, you and Jeff being friends for so long. We didn't even get into any of the stories. I know. Yeah. I know.
Your basketball stories too. We have
Happy Hour After Dark coming up next.
Yes. That's prepare. Right. It's a 9-hour stream session. Let's go.
Is there anything else? So we talked about the short film Alexa. So you can go to alexaknowsall.com. That's going to be awesome. We can see that premiere in 7 days. 1,000 little cuts, right?
Yeah.
So that'll be out sometime next year. Jeff and actually Emily, let's write this down so that we make sure we promote that stuff when it comes out. And you're working on an AMC show.
That's right. Kevin can F himself,
which sounds like a super unique thing. Cutting between drama and,
oh my
and
God,
multicam sitcom.
Yeah.
That'd be cool. Well, is there anything else you want to plug or Jeff share or anything?
Not for me. Thank you so much for having me on. I can't wait to be back.
Awesome.
We will have you back and we will talk more and show more embarrassing videos.
Oh no.
Oh my gosh. Cue them up, Jeff.
We haven't even gotten to the younger us stuff.
And
that we
won't.
This is, oh my gosh, for you listening at home, you better get ready. We're going to get to the younger stuff. It's going to be awesome next time. I can't wait. Thank you, Joe, so much for coming on. Next week, for real this time, we do have Ashley Fulton coming on. She's a TV producer here in town. She's also president of American Advertising Federation Madison.
No relation.
What did I say?
Also,
Ashley Taylor.
I said Ashley Fulton.
Ashley Taylor. Her name is Ashley Taylor. She's going to be on next week. It's going to be awesome. No relation to Joe Fulton. Very different last name.
They don't have the same last name.
This is why we love live production. So thanks again, Joe and Jeff and John. Everyone at home, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Everybody.
Bye.